Hey, everybody. Welcome back. What a weekend. What a couple of weeks to be a Mets fan. This has been it's been wild. This is the drama that none of us really wanted or expected, but I'm sure that we're all deep down kind of enjoying it. Taryn, have you lost any hair this weekend?
Big time. And I got to admit, so I have the, here we go. Oh, series winning beer. We love it.
Well, is that for the Mets or the Mariners?
That's for the the M's. It's for teams.
It's LFGM across the board.
That's right. And I got to admit something, Tim.
What's up?
I've been stomping around the apartment. I have been in a grumpy mood. I have been a terrible partner, yelling profanities about the Mets and saying, oh, they're dead. I have been very upset this week. You know, I think we're generally positive people. And that can take a toll when you feel like you have been wrong the entire time. And I felt that I had been wrong. And geez, that day that the Mets were in second place, it wasn't fun. I hope that they don't do it again the rest of the year. How about that?
See, I don't mind it, especially when you consider the circumstances around it. The Mets haven't played bad baseball. They've played about a week of bad baseball, and then they've turned it around, which is apparently not against the rules in baseball. You're allowed to turn it around if you're playing bad, which is always a cool thing. You know, the Braves have been playing lights-out baseball. The Mets could have been playing, I believe, they could have won two out of three or at that pace and still been caught by the Braves. I believe they would have been caught this week if they played at a two out of three pace, which, you know, that's incredible.
And what did they play? Like a 1.75 out of three or something like that?
Something like that. What would two out of three would be
666.
Yeah, 667 winning percentage. And the Braves have been playing like 730. So, I believe they would have caught up to them sooner or later. They caught up to them, and now both teams are kind of feeling the pressure. And I think the Mets' little downturn, I know Ron Darling was talking about it in the booth this week, how you could feel the pressure at, you know, when the Mets really weren't scoring runs. With every pitch, with every at-bat, you could feel that pressure mounting, and that's from outside looking in. You have to think that takes some getting used to. And by the end of the weekend, between Saturday and Sunday, the Mets scored 20 runs and put up 30 hits.
Yeah, so what is the difference? Do you think that they've just bottomed out, or are you seeing something like in terms of better at-bats that is leading to greater run production?
Honestly, again, this is a very amateur look at things, but taking that pressure and just that comfort level that guys had all year, and, you know, seemingly that was out the window. And that's not really characteristic of this roster. You haven't seen guys, you know, slump in bunches. And there were still some guys hitting throughout the whole thing. We'll talk about the guys who have been performing well as of late. But, you know, just no one had that confident, cocksure look at the plate like they had been all year. This is just, again, me throwing darts. I would point to the added pressure of knowing, okay, now Atlanta's actually either nipping at our heels or they've overtaken us. And it seemed like once Atlanta jumped over them, everything clicked. And it was, you know, it's been, I don't want to say smooth sailing, but extremely encouraging to see everybody kind of wake up, to see that confidence back. It's huge.
Yeah. And so specifically, Lindor said that the group had hit a wall, more or less. And I think that's pretty typical of a major league season, right? Like, there's going to be ebbs and flows. You've talked about it all year. Like, you more than anyone has talked about it, Tim. Like, there were going to be ups and downs in this, and for the most part, it's been up, right?
What do you mean?
No, I was saying, like, the Mets season, or any baseball season, there's going to be ups and downs. And for the most part, the Mets have been up. And so for them to have like a bad week, Lindor to say that they've hit a wall, they lost four games in the last week, two to the Nats, one to the Pirates, and one to the Marlins. All games where they haven't had offense production, but also where they haven't had great pitching. And so for this group to understand that they've hit the wall, they're going to try to get through it. The, you know, Eduardo Escobar is the first of the group to kind of come back, but they've got more reinforcements on the way. I think that there's just an understanding in the clubhouse that they know that they are going to be in this battle all the way. And to have like a bounce back, they did it in Pittsburgh and then they've done it in Miami. I just think that speaks to the quality of the team and their character.
Oh, I mean, downtimes are unavoidable. And yeah, I don't want to sound like a broken record because we have talked about this when the Mets have, you know, hit the skids, and it's been very short-lived each time they have. I mean, they still haven't lost more than three in a row all season. They've had this uncanny ability to turn it around quickly, to not be affected by the outside static, to just find their rhythm, find their groove, and get back to what they do, which is win ball games at a very, very impressive pace. I think this weekend, again, and it's the Marlins, and you don't want to overlook it, but as we've said a million times, you have to eat against inferior competition. And lately, yeah, the Mets. All right, so I'm going to take it back to August 15th. August 15th, the Mets started their four-game series against the Braves. That ended on the 18th. Since then, I guess, and on the 18th, the Mets were 3.5 up in the East. Since then, the Mets have only lost one series. They lost two out of three to the Nationals. They took three of four from the Phillies, lost two of three to the Nationals, took two of three from Pittsburgh, took two of three from Miami. Now, the losing the series to Washington and then losing that first game to Washington, I mean, if you were just jumping into social media Mets world at that point, you would think that the Mets were cooked. They were done. It was over. They were an awful team. They overachieved all year. This is not a ready for prime time ball club. All the evidence points to the opposite. And I know this is probably a rhetorical question, but I can't wrap my head around why. And there's, you know, I don't want to get on fans for fanning as they fan. There's no wrong way to do this.
No. Yeah. No. Talk to me, because I've been that guy this week. Like, I'm somewhat ashamed to say it. Maybe I'm not a good fan or whatever, but no, I've been kind of on the ledge this week. So yeah, what you're saying, like you're saying it to me, it's fine.
No, yeah, I'm just kind of venting, and it's more along the lines of I don't want to change anybody's mind. You know, if you enjoy the high stress point of view of watching of taking in baseball, more power to you. That's just how you like.
You know, I think I don't enjoy it. I think
not you, just in general, like fans in general. Because there's some out there who probably enjoy this. And there's nothing wrong with that. It is what it is. Yeah, I just don't understand it.
Not for me. I hate being on the edge. I would love for every game to be predictable and for the Mets to win all of them. But no,
But are they not predictable? That's where I'm hung up. To me, they are predictable. We've seen them get back in line. We've seen them shake them, you know, dust themselves off and pick themselves back up so many times this year. I think that history is being leaned on a lot more than it should. I think that their track record this year doesn't point at all to a team that's quote unquote collapsing. There's slumps. It's 162 for a reason, and it's beautiful. But there's, you know, teams just don't go out and win 80% of their games for 4 months like the Braves are doing right now. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, no, the Braves, what they've done since June 1st is special. There's no way around that. Like, what they have done is amazing. And it took that to catch the Mets. I think you can say, like, oh, 10 and a half games, they blew it. It's not. The Mets played at a normal pace, and that is true.
And that's where my tweet – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think what happened specifically this week, right, the Mets losing to the teams that they did is incredibly frustrating. I'm not going to apologize for being frustrated by them playing like shit against the Nats or the Pirates or the Marlins, because those are teams that are not actively trying to win.
Well, Dave, is the flip side of that coin there. There's the underdog spoiler aspect, and that's very real. And I think that you saw teams that wanted to win when the Mets played them. And I think that woke the Mets up, like, oh, shit, these guys are not going to be walked over. And I think that you saw that come out this weekend in Miami.
I would hope so, and maybe they pick up that vibe, and that's what they take the rest of September, because those are the teams that they're going to be playing, and those are the teams that they can get fat on, and they've gotten fat on those types of teams all year. But I don't think there's anything wrong with being upset that they played like poorly against those teams, especially that the pitching has not been good against those teams. But yeah, as much as I'm saying, like, those teams are not trying to win, that's like an organizational thing. I'm not saying that the players are not trying to win. Obviously, like, all of the Marlins players want to do well. They all want to have, like, careers beyond this season. They want to play for winning teams. They're playing for their next jobs as much as they're playing for this one. But I think that the vibe around the Mets losing the division lead, which they've gained it back, they're up a game and a half, Tim. But the vibe around them losing the division lead would have been so much different if they had done it against, like, a winning team, as opposed to, like, them having a bad week against cellar dwellers, right? Don't you agree with that?
Yeah. The Dodgers' world didn't end when they got swept out of Pittsburgh earlier.
Exactly. No, at home against Pittsburgh. They lost all three games at home against Pittsburgh.
Oh, I thought they got swept in Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Yeah, no. So that's the thing. Like, yes, good teams are going to still lose games even at home.
Dude, 162-0 is unrealistic. Yes. 120 and 120-40 is unrealistic. But, you know, there's so many different factors that go into the momentum needed to win a World Series. That's why you see so many wild card teams get hot and win. That's why you see teams back into the postseason and win.
Yes.
That's why you see teams like the 2001 Mariners, who were virtually unstoppable.
116 wins.
Oh, one of the most fun, exciting, you know, and ESPN2 would carry their games and stuff like that at night. So you'd stay up late and watch them. And it was just a treat to be able to watch a team that efficient and effective. And they lost in the first round, in the divisional round. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is baseball, man. I know that I believe Lindor was saying it post game a couple of nights ago, and he kind of leaned on it a couple of times. Like, it's baseball, but it's the most poignant answer to any of this is that it's baseball. Nothing is certain. Nothing is sure. Nothing is everything. Almost everything is possible. It's baseball.
It is.
Just get to the show, get to the dance and take it from there. And the Mets, I think they realized this week, especially with the Braves right up their rear ends, is that playoff baseball starts right now. Every at bat, every inning, every pitch. Taijuan Walker gutting through seven on Sunday. Like, you know, little things that the Mets were doing so well all year, but, you know, it's 162. It gets stale. It gets old. You got to shake yourself back up. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that kind of go into it. But now, this is, you know, this is it. This is when you flip those switches on. You don't switch them off until the season's over. Not the regular season, everything. Until that last out, those switches have to stay on. As mentally grueling as it might be, when it comes down to it, it's decision-making, it's execution, and that's across the board. That's from the coaching staff down to the players, up to the front office, everybody. The little things is what's going to carry this very, very talented team further and further to their pinnacle. And I think that everyone here, me and you and whoever's listening, can agree that this team's peak, this team's zenith, is a World Series title. It's a very realistic goal for this ball club. And there's going to be stiff competition, National League especially. This is going to be a very, very exciting postseason, Mets or not. But I put this team up against anybody. In a 7-game series, in a 5-game series, with this pitching, with this, the clutch genes that this team has worn. I mean, this is, it's a special ball club. I don't think there's any question around that. And, I think it's fair and it's understandable to live and die with this team, with any team, because, you know, we're a passionate fan base. But in the same respect, I think big picture and perspective are also very, very important when there's 162 games and a lot of different factors that go into what comes out at the end of a very, very long season. I hope I didn't draw on for too long.
No, I agree with that. And I don't think that any of that is to say that winning the division is not important. I think that we both agree winning the division is very important in terms of getting the bye, being able to set up your pitchers, not having them gassed, especially given that, like, you know, both of our top pitchers, who are probably the two best in the world, honestly, both of them are older, both of them are coming off of serious injury, and we need them both to be healthy for an entire postseason run. And a lot of that requires that things line up kind of perfectly. Like, you never know when this left side fatigue that that Scherzer has dealt with, or the scapula kind of thing that DeGrom has dealt with, are going to pop up. So we're kind of banking on, like, these bullets coming at the right time. So I think that is part of it, right? Like, there's
a big part of it. And I think the other part of it is when something does happen, when Max goes out unexpectedly for 10, 15 days, retroactively, whatever, you need guys to step up. And I think that, you know, look at Peterson, Trevor Williams, who's done it all season. You know, again, it comes back to the little things, right?
Yeah. And Peterson wasn't at his best in the opening game of this series, but really what it came down to is that we're relying on Joely Rodriguez to kind of be the lefty in this bullpen, and he really wasn't at his best either, right? And he hasn't been recently.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
no, it's fine. I'm only saying these things as to spur the conversation.
Before we move away from Joely, like, I think we have talked about it before. I mean, you know, going back to the beginning of August up until his last outing where it wasn't pretty, you know, he had a sub 2.7 ERA over since August 1st. It doesn't mean that he should be in super high leverage spots, though, especially when his splits aren't what your quintessential Lugie would be. I think he's a valuable piece in the bullpen. I just think he's got to be used more effectively. And I know that there's still holes right now. I know with Trevor May on the shelf, he was supposed to be towards the back end. Lugo gave up a home run on Sunday, which was, you know, uncharacteristic, but you got to hope guys are just kind of working out these kinks. And, you know, come October, you know, when you're looking at Lugo to Ottavino to Diaz, or and then whoever has to hand it off to those three, I mean, the Mets could be in very good shape between McGill, Drew Smith working his way back. Let's say Peterson gets pushed out of the rotation. You have to get there. You have to get there and get there comfortably and get there healthy. And you know, just hats off to the guys who have got the Mets to this point and are still being called on to, I guess, wear shoes that don't quite fit them. And then that's kind of where Joely comes in, where, you know, I think I would have to assume that Buck knows that Joely Rodriguez and Michael Givens should not be in the seventh or eighth innings of a tight game, but sometimes they have to be. I think that Mets fans are a little frustrated because, you know, again, Mets fans who are, and I'm in the same boat. There's just sometimes that you don't want to see either of those guys in those spots, but flip side of that coin, you're preparing them for much, much bigger spots, you know, in a few weeks or in about a month. They're going to have to be ready for the pressure cooker. And, you know, maybe there's a method to Buck's madness. Who knows? I'm just saying, I like the pieces here. They just got to be used correctly.
Yeah, I hope that there's a method to madness. He's a lot smarter than I am. He knows a lot more about baseball. He's watched a lot more games than I have. So I hope that there's something there. Let's take a break real quick. We'll talk about Darren Ruff and Tyler Naquin, that sort of platoon, and what you saw from Mark Vientos in his major league debut.
Definitely. Oh, absolutely. Escobar's on my list. And the return of Guillorme. And I think that should bring us to the end. But please, I'm sorry. Take us into the break, my friend. That was beautiful.
Yeah. We'll hear from our sponsors. And so we'll be back.
You're a fucking natural. Excuse me. Hang tight. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And welcome back. We're having fun. All things considered, man, this is actually really fun. I think that's what it comes down to. I think that's what everyone has to embrace, is that this is all just it's a form of entertainment. And, you know, the room for analysis and the room for banter is kind of just bonus, and plenty of room for that.
I'll say hard for me to keep the perspective given that we're watching it as fans, but I appreciate your ability to do it. Honestly, I am I feel more and more as we're getting towards the games that matter most, I am living and dying with these pitches.
Oh yeah. I've learned to kind of sip it and savor it. And for so long, I let this team and all my sports teams really affect my life. And maybe this is just all a defense mechanism to stop that from happening. But like, I don't let myself get too wrapped up. I say that now. Let's see where we're at in a month. And are winning or losing big games, and I've got tears running down my face. Like,
can I just say that I think it is this team in particular for me. This is just such a great group, and I just really hope that they get a chance to get what is the ultimate prize, that piece of metal at the end, because this group really deserves it. I still think that this is the best Mets club in my lifetime. So let's talk a little bit more about who might be rejoining this group,
how it all shapes up. Okay. Well, we got some guys returning very soon. We got some guys returning moderately soon. Let's run through the
list. Let's talk about the easy ones first. So Scherzer, he threw a bullpen yesterday, and Buck said that went well. So that bodes well for him being back in like a week and a half, right? Because he's backdated.
Yeah, it sounded like he was pretty sure that this wouldn't be a serious thing.
Yeah, and so it might be just as much that they're trying to limit his innings against like middle lower table clubs as much as it is giving
him healthy. It sounded like you said tablecloths. I'm sorry, I giggled. My apologies.
Yeah. And Trevor May also threw recently. He Buck also said that he was more or less fine.
More or less fine. I like that. Keep it vague.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that we know exactly what we're going to get from Trevor May. He's looked both bad this year, and he's looked really good at times. Yeah. He's done things like strike out two out of three batters in an inning, and he's also given up a lot of hard contact. So what do you think? What is his role on a postseason roster? What is Trevor May's role?
Yeah, big outs. That's everybody's role in the play, at least in the bullpen on a postseason roster.
Sure. So, like, what's the scenario in which you're using Trevor May?
Oh, I'd love to get him work because he's said it in the past. He said it to the press corps. He's actually said it on this podcast. You know, going back to, I guess, probably going into his first spring training with the Mets, he spoke with us. Regular, consistent work is what brings the best Trevor May out. And so, you know, I'm hesitant to throw him directly into the fire without knowing that his command and his control and his feel for his pitches, which, you know, this is not just a Trevor May thing. This isn't any pitcher thing. Once I guess, you know, not looking at it from a fan perspective, looking at it from someone who's, all right, who's going in next perspective. If Trevor May is confident in everything he's doing out there, I put Trevor May out in any setup type situation, and I'm good. But I think getting them to that point is the crux of this entire process for him right now. And I don't know, like, you know, I haven't seen him throw any of his rehab, right? I haven't seen a bullpen, nothing. I mean, most of us haven't. But in the same respect, I think we've seen Trevor May when he's at his best, and that confidence is palpable when it's there. I just, you know, Hefner and co have to get him to that point, because once he's thrown with confidence, he's one of the best relievers in baseball. We've seen it. Whether he loses his command, whether he loses his control, whether he loses his confidence, something's always kind of gotten his way, or of course, injury. But, you know, last year, for probably, well, the last month or so that the Mets were in it, and then through the end of the year when they were pretty much out of it, Trevor May was outstanding. And nobody really took notice of it because the Mets were either falling apart or had already fallen apart, and it was just too tough to watch for most, which I get totally. That was a really hard year. But I think Trevor May could be an X factor of sorts in October, especially if that confidence is there.
And the Mets have a lot of guys that could be possibly in that position of X factor. We were discussing a little bit offline about David Peterson. Where do you see his role kind of shaking out in this last month? Do you think he's going to continue to be in the spot start role? And if not, do you think he'll be paired with a kind of guy that maybe they don't trust to go as long, whether that's Cookie or Taijuan Walker?
Well, Taijuan gave him 7 on Sunday, which is very encouraging. I want to say
Cookie gave him 6.
Yeah, Cookie went 6. He looked really sharp as the game went on.
Yeah.
I want to say it was Meek Phil, our buddy Meek Phil, who's also a friend of the pod, is over at the Barstool, with the Barstool Mets gang. And, you know, I guess we were talking early in the game how I mentioned he hadn't looked as sharp as he had, which is to be expected. I mean, he was on the IL for a while. His first start back was after no rehab starts, and he didn't look great. But as the night went on, that was Saturday, he looked really good, and the confidence was back. It's such a big part of it, man. But, I'd love to see him employ that splitter and slider and work them off each other, and I think his cutter works off the slider, and that's even more impressive when he could do that. He's a big part of what the Mets are trying to do, and whether it's him or Bassett or Walker, they're going to be needed the way that the playoff scheduling is. This isn't going to be a 1-2-3 and turn it over again type situation. Between travel days and lack of off days, it's going to be, you know, all hands on deck. And I think that's what this team is built for, man. This is a lot of solid depth.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, but for anybody that does not know, the playoff schedule has been changed. This year, the NLDS schedule has one fewer off day, and as does the NLCS schedule. So it is going to put more pressure on fourth starters than you would have in other years.
Now, to answer your question about piggybacking, I think down the stretch during the regular season, I getting Williams a day, if something goes awry, I think having Peterson stretched out, having Williams stretched out to be those long guys is great. I know Lucchese made a rehab outing with Binghamton possibly on Sunday. If he can be of any assistance, great. He's a major league caliber pitcher.
And he's eligible, right? Because he's on the
60 day. So yeah, he could be added.
Exactly. And
Vientos could technically be added too.
As long as he's been on the 40.
Sorry.
He's been on the 40 the entire time. It was August 31st that was the day that people had to be on the 40 in order to be eligible for the postseason.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was on the 40, so he's good. But like, say someone someone who wasn't on the 40, they could always technically be added, as long as they're replacing an injured player. They can get a waiver from the commissioner's office to add a player.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's not it's got to be like we need to bring this player up. He's replacing so and so. It's been done before, and from what I've read, it's almost like a formality. But that playoff eligibility deadline is there's certainly some wiggle room, some gray area there.
That's good to know. and we were speaking about rehab assignments. Tyler McGill, he struck out the side in Syracuse this week. When do you expect him to make his move up? And is he the fireman in the bullpen come October?
I am so intrigued by what Tylor Megill could be coming out of the bullpen, just because he's got such a nice array of pitches. He can be a strikeout guy in a starter role. Imagine
and he can push that up to 100.
Yeah, exactly. In a relief role, he's going to be pushing harder. Even if he's going 98, 99, his secondary is going to work so much better off of velocity, which is, you know, that's just how it works. I think it's going to open up a lot more doors for him as far as keeping guys off balance, sequencing, tunneling, especially if I'm trying to remember his repertoire off the top of my head. He throws a four-seamer, he throws a slider, he throws a changeup, and his slider and his changeup work off each other. There's one more pitch that he throws. Gosh darn it. I can't think of it. I don't even know if I'm correct. But if he has that cast open, please do. If he's adding velocity and keeping that tunneling, man, you know, whether it's to righties or lefties, whatever he's using, the slider or the changeup, it's going to make those things bite even harder, at least from a hitter's perspective. You know, if he wants to go chest high outside to a lefty, and then I don't know if you've seen Trevor May throw, he throws a high changeup as well. A lot of guys have started to throw higher changeups, high sliders too, which I think is dangerous because to a hitter, it looks like just a hanging slider, which is appealing. Of course, they're going to swing at it, but unless you got that sharp cut and it's going to dip right underneath their bat, it's a freaking dangerous pitch. But a chest high or like a midsection high changeup to me is it's such an effective pitch because guys, again, they look at it and like, oh, this is just a hanging breaking pitch, and it jumps the other way, and I think it really throws them off, whether it's to a lefty going away or from a right-handed pitcher or to a righty going in. I think that for a guy like Megill, who has his stuff that can work in so many different ways, adding velocity to that mix on a consistent basis, I think he's going to be an extremely effective relief pitcher. I think he's got the mindset for it. I think he's got the FU attitude for it. You know, the quiet, calm, reserved type, but put him out there in an October game in the eighth inning, and it's important. Oh, and I bet you get the best of Tylor Megill. I'm firing myself up right now, man.
You really are. I'm excited about Tylor in the sense that he's known that this is going to be his role for, what is it, 3 or 4 months now. He's known ever since he got injured that when he comes back, he's going to be the guy out of the bullpen. And I think that opens the door for him and Ottavino to kind of share that setup man role. And so if he comes back and he throws hard and he's still able to get both sides of the plate out, I think that sets him up to be a setup man, which I think is massive because that's what the Mets are waiting on. I think is just to have somebody that is reliable in terms of getting to Diaz and our guy, Ottavino, who nobody thought was going to be at this position, but really has been fantastic the entire year, except for rare instances.
Early on, he was shaky, but otherwise, I mean, in the second half, him, Diaz, and Lugo have been three of the best relievers in the National League.
Yeah, except for the off occasion, other than
the world of a reliever, though.
Ottavino?
It's the world of any reliever. It's such a volatile position. I mean, you can't go out and be expected to be perfect every night. I mean, Mariano, everyone's not Mo. Everyone's not Edwin Diaz. And even Edwin Diaz, we were talking about it a few weeks ago. He looked shaky, and good on him for being able to reel himself back in the moment, as opposed to going on a week-long freaking bender, not like a substance bender, but like a stuff bender where he can't find the strike zone. He's leaving him over the heart, whatever.
But even Mariano Rivera, as good as he is, also.
Yeah. You know, creatures. They're humans. They make some. They lose their feel for their stuff. It's always going to happen. It's about, you know, getting yourself back in order as quick as possible. And I mean, I know we have orange and blue tinted glasses on when it comes to this, but I really think that not just the pitching staff, top to bottom, you look at this whole roster, you look at the whole coaching staff, the whole culture, the vibe, you were talking about it in the first half. Everyone's ready to roll with those punches. It seems like everyone's knows what's in front of them. The veteran presence has everyone ready to embrace that do or die mentality and not over expend themselves. I hope I said that right.
Yeah. So a couple more things.
Yeah, please do. I'm sorry, man. I'm just,
no, you're, we're
this is uncharted territory, man.
let's finish up a couple more things. We'll talk about rest of the postseason roster. Nino went deep today.
Finally.
Is he the starting catcher in game one of the playoffs?
He was my starting catcher in spring training, but if McCann is still hitting, which he's been hitting as of late, I think in the last week he's turned it on considerably.
Above 300 the last.
Oh, I don't know if that's sustainable, but let's just say that he's still hitting and he's still in the, you know, he's still somewhat reliable from the plate. I think a true platoon is going to be the way to go. And I wouldn't totally be against it, but Nito receives this staff so well and everyone looks so much more comfortable pitching to him. Game one, Nito gets the nod.
Okay. And Dom Smith went deep this week in Syracuse. He obviously doesn't have any role probably with the Mets in 2022, but do you think he has any role with the Mets in 23? Is he going to get moved in the offseason? Is he non-tendered? What do you think?
I think he's going to be non-tendered, and I think this is going to be one of the more gut punch non-tenders in recent memory. Dom was a first-round pick. Dom battled through a lot.
Yeah, Mets
to really find a peak with the Mets. And he did. As short-lived as it was, he found a peak. The 2020 season was outstanding for him. Second half 2019 was terrific. He found a peak. And at some point, I know we just talked about being comfortable and being confident. That all kind of just fell apart. And I think, you know, there's a lot that goes into what happened there. And I think that Dom spoke a little bit about it in some, you know, through some media outlets, just being uncomfortable and ready to move on. And I think everyone thought that he was going to be traded when he publicly requested it, but the Mets just kind of dicked around with him all year. And I genuinely hope as a fan of Dom Smith that he's not affected long-term, but I kind of see him being non-tendered and, you know, that fresh start that J.D. Davis is enjoying in San Francisco right now.
Yeah.
I fully expect Dom Smith to land somewhere, play every day, regain his confidence, and be a major league caliber first baseman. And even regain that group that found him finish sixth in weighted runs created plus in 2020. He still has that in him. He's a line drive, gaps hitter, terrific fielder. He can find a spot. And whether it's in Baltimore, who's been picking up guys and getting the most out of him all year, maybe it's in Boston. You know, Dom's going to land somewhere and he's going to be fine. I really genuinely think that. And I just hope the Mets didn't mess him up that bad.
Well, so you heard it here first. Simply amazing. Dom Smith, he's going to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in the Shohei Ohtani trade that brings Shohei to the Mets. Amazing, amazing breaking news there, Tim.
Well, you know, I do have to keep my sources very protected in this case, but you know, if the Mets are going to get
Billy Epler, Billy Epler.
No, it's Illy Bepler, bro. It's his long. It's like fourth cousin twice removed or something. But yeah, Illy Bepler. He's my buddy. No, between Otani and Trout and the impending sale of the Angels. A year ago, I would have said, yeah, like, why would we be laughing about it, just talking about, oh, yeah, Tom Smith and Luis Guillorme for Otani and Trout. Shout out to Brian. What's up, comeback, Brian? It's my boy. But, you know, you have to actually think that if those guys go on the market, the Mets are going to blow everything up to make a push and probably land on their feet and hit the ground running doing so. And it's just uncharted territory. I don't know what to think as a Mets fan right now. I get everyone's kind of all twisted up when the Mets lose a couple of games. They look shitty for a couple of games. They get all wound up because we're Mets fans. We've been down this road so many times, but I don't know how many times we can tell you guys, this is different. Everything is different. They might lose this year. It might be an extremely disappointing ending to 2022.
You think about the percentages, yeah. I mean, they almost certainly will not do the thing that we want them to do at the end that none of us have ever gotten to enjoy.
No.
Almost certainly, just because those are the odds. But in terms of, like, teams that have a chance, they're right up there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They're
right there. They might. They might do it. Even as much as, like, all of us, like, freak out about every single game, and which there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, it's just, if you follow baseball, it's just so many games to not be upset if you watch bad baseball.
Yeah.
I
think bad baseball coinciding with injuries, coinciding with guys getting used to being in new places. I mean,
coinciding with the team behind you never losing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a perfect storm of an exciting September. I mean, look at Luis Guillorme. And a lot of people have pointed this out, how the Mets kind of lost their footing as a team, not the Braves notwithstanding, just kind of lost their footing, their rhythm once Luis Guillorme hit the shelf. That kind of makes sense. He's a glue guy. We've always said that. Shout out to Simply Amazing Podcast for always being fans of Luis Guillorme. Hi, Andrew. Me and Andrew had probably the most heated – it wasn't an argument, but it was the most heated conversation probably ever had on this show. And this was way back when. This might have even been before it was called Simply Amazing. But it was about Luis Guillorme, and I was sure – that he was a major league caliber player, and Andrew was not so positive. And
was this after the 22 pitch at bat?
Oh, this was well before the 22 pitch at bat.
This was early on.
And then
you're way ahead of it.
When Guillorme hit that big home run in 2019, end of the year, like last week against the Nationals. 2019, possibly 2020, but I think 2019. And he started to come around. And then this year, I mean, Andrew and everybody else, they're just, you know, they get it. They're looking at Luis Guillorme and say, oh, this is what – I mean, it's not just me. This is what many, many Luis Guillorme diehards are talking about. Ernest Dove, we got to shout out Ernest. Jacob, of course, was all over this. You know, Luis Guillorme's contact skills reminds everyone of Jeff McNeil. His glove skills remind everybody of Jeff McNeil. But, you know, this year we've seen that Luis Guillorme is his own player. It's his own brand of baseball player. It's his own brand of play. He's just he's not built like many other ball players. I think the Mets missed that, genuinely. And I think once he comes back, especially now that Escobar's found his stroke, like considerably found his stroke. We haven't even really talked about how ridiculously hot Eduardo Escobar, a.k.a. Eddie Barrels, is right now. He's picked up where Canna left off. Canna was on that ridiculous streak. He's right there. Same as McNeil.
Hannah's still on it.
And so is McNeil, man. You know, it's amazing when all the pistons are hitting, how smooth this engine runs. But that's besides the point. With Guillaume coming back, with Escobar doing what he's doing, with Ruff and Naquin, and to an extent Vogel back, who's looked a little bit better at us as of late. Same thing with Naquin, but Darren Ruff does not look good. And he was expected to be a big part of this DH bench bat, you know, group, triumvirate, whatever you want to call them. I think that with Guillaume coming back and the versatility on this roster, it's really going to put guys in tight spots as far as having to earn at-bats. And hey, if that means Darren Ruff is not going to get consistent playing time and has to come off the bench very cold and produce, I mean, he kind of made his own bed in that sense. I think Naquin's going to serve more of a purpose just because of his fielding capabilities and the fact that he has looked more capable at times.
But that's why they started Ruff today, right? Is just to try to get him going.
You got to get him going. Oh, this is Mets years of yore. I still don't understand hitting him in the five hole, but it is what it is. They got to do something.
I understand just the general sense of like trying to get him going, because otherwise, like, what do you have? Because he's not great defensively. It is like a matter of if he's going to be productive offensively, he'll be on the roster come October. But otherwise, you know, he's not useful for the Mets. So
not if we will see.
So just real quick, Mets have Bassett, DeGrom, Peterson, we think, coming up this week. Chicago and Pittsburgh are coming up next 7 games. That's
Chicago's a feisty club, man. I don't want
to. They fought us real tough, especially in the doubleheader at Wrigley earlier this year. But it will be important to take at least 5 of these next 7. We will be back to be able to talk about it later this week. Recap the Chicago series and talk about Pittsburgh, and then I will be in Milwaukee this coming week.
Really?
Get a chance to visit my 20th Major League Baseball stadium and also be able to see our beloved Mets. So I'm excited. We've got some teams that the Mets should be able to beat here in the next couple of weeks. And as always, so excited to be able to talk about it with you, Tim. And what is that sign off?
Oh, it's Let's Fucking Go Mets. And kids, put your earmuffs on, rewind it and put them back on. But that's really all there is to it right now. As fans, we root. And at this point, I think all we can do is root. And it's probably the most efficient and best thing we can do right now is just root. And, you know, let's go Mets, man. That's it.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. You know where to find us. It's LFGM all day, every day. We'll see you next time. Peace.